Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a bi-weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Clemencia, and we are glad you're here. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church.
The big idea for this episode is the house church movement. Is it biblical? Should we get involved? What about these guys who are selling the church buildings and moving into the house? Today, we've got Logan Wolf with us, a wonderful church planter in Utah. Hey, man, this is the part of the episode where we're supposed to advertise my book.
All right.
So what do you think we should say?
I don't feel bad about it. It's not a shameless plug. It's literally your book. You've put a lot of work into it.
That's a good point. So you need to pick up a copy. And hey, here's the thing. If you buy a copy and you didn't like it,
right.
Drew said he'll pay for you to ship it back.
That's not what I said. At least an In-N-Out burger. I'll ship to them.
You'll ship them?
If it's on the East Coast, it'll be all spoiled, but it's fine. Hey, I'm in this book too.
You are. You're actually in this book. And I say some things that people don't know about you. It's going to be great. I tell some stories.
All right.
Are you?
Where can people find this book at?
Oh, that's right.
And what it's called.
Okay. So you can pick up this book.
Right.
It's called The Quest for Friendship.
The Quest for Friendship. Insert Galliant music here.
That's really what it is.
Right. It's happening right now.
The Idea Network publishing arm of our network has produced this awesome resource. And I really do appreciate it. It's exciting. It really is a discussion of friendship. And I want you to pick up a copy at ideanetwork.church in the shop tab. It's the very first resource at the very top. You can pick it up. And if you put in the promo code free shipping is yours.
All right.
Yeah.
There it is.
Go do it now.
The Quest for Friendship. Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks. On today's episode, we have Logan Wolf, church planner, pastor in Utah. Logan, thanks for joining us.
Oh, man, I appreciate you guys having me.
Hey, man, this is episode 99, which is kind of a big deal. It's right before the big, and a lot of people may have heard some rumors. I don't know, but the next episode, episode 100, is a huge deal. We're going to be making some big announcements about the Idea Network itself, some huge statements about what's going on. Also, there are going to be giveaways. First time we've ever done giveaways on this podcast, as far as I know. So the 100th episode, we're going to be giving away a $100 gift card.
We're going to be like Oprah on Christmas.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You get a thing and
everybody gets
it. You get a swag and
we give away ideas every.
We do. It's literally the entire premise of this.
But we're actually going to give away real stuff next episode, which is episode 100. But we saved an incredible interview for episode 99. We have 99 problems, but Logan ain't one. You know what I mean? So here he is. He's a longtime member of the Idea Network. He's been part of us since the very beginning. Most often speaks on cultural contextualization as a church planter in Utah, the home of the Jazz. And it's just the first thing we all think of when we think of Utah. Logan, talking to Logan, interviewing Logan is like talking to an old friend. And we love you, buddy. We're glad you're here. But today we're talking about specifically the house church movement. Before we get into that, how you been? How's Utah?
Things are great. Man, we've had some exciting stuff happen. But I just had a mission team leave this morning. They've been with us for a week. And so we've been out on the streets and engaging people. And I don't know, it's been good. School's wrapping up. My wife's a principal, so she's about to be done with school this week. And my youngest just finished preschool for the first time. So it's all coming to an end.
Oh, fantastic. Well, this episode will land like almost near August. So people are starting to think about going back to school. I'm glad to be in this moment. You know what I mean? I'm glad that we're coming out of school and our future selves have to deal with going back to school.
One less kid in undergrad right now.
Yeah. My son just graduated from high school, Jonathan. And I know Heather. I know you guys are close to Heather. You guys love Heather. By the way, Logan, you will always be close to my wife's heart because when my wife taught an idea day one day, Logan comes in to hear the lesson, and it was meant to be a man and woman. It was meant to be a communal lesson for both men and women. And Logan was the only man sitting in the room. And she, you were, and it was an amazing lesson, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it was good. It was awesome.
And so forever, Heather's like, man, I like your one friend, Logan. He's like my favorite Idea Network guy. So Logan, as you've been in Utah, you've reached people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. You've seen baptisms and discipleship. But over the last 2 years, I've noticed not only on social media, but in our personal interactions, our conversations, you've been talking a lot about the house church movement. This has become a passion for you. And since you're a leader within the Idea Network, what is a passion of yours is a passion of ours. And I thought, well, instead of just having private conversations over the phone, let's get Logan on the podcast and share his passion with the network. And let's talk about how we can reach more people with the gospel of Jesus Christ through the house church movement nationally and abroad. But first of all, the first obvious question, the obvious question, and I know there's house church pastors listening right now, and you're like, this is a terrible question. It's okay. There's a lot of us that are dumb. We're trying to learn. What is a house church?
yeah, I think it's in the name.
Wait, you mean there's not like a seven-step unveiling process that you do? Or it's just,
okay. This isn't in the name. No, it's, I think house church is a word we use to just describe a simple, just the bare bones of what the church is meant to be biblically. And so we're stripping away a lot of the extra biblical structure that we may put around that. So think facilities, staff, programs, budgets, those kind of things, and focus just on what we see, one, Jesus commanding his disciples to do, and then two, what we see the early church doing after Jesus ascended. So emphasis on preaching repentance and faith, baptism, prayer, making disciples, loving each other, worship, breaking bread, you know, Lord's Supper, generosity, time in the word, developing others, commitment to each other. So just basically just the commands of Christ played out in kitchens and in living rooms and in backyards and in parks, that kind of stuff.
I absolutely love it. Now, when you talk about these locations, kitchens and living rooms and backyards and at the park, I mean, you're literally saying within the houses of our people or in our own house, we are just talking about these core values. And it seems to be the core values that you listed are straight out of the New Testament, straight out of the disciples, the Gospels, straight out of the Book of Acts. Are there a specific list of core values that you've developed or that are in a broader movement as a whole?
I mean, that we actually describe what I just said there as our core values. So if this is what Jesus commanded, and if this is what the church turned around and did after Jesus was gone, then this must be the most important thing. Like this has to be what we give ourselves to. And I think the tendency is to try to dress those things up or to water them down or to make them more palatable, maybe in some sense. And in that, we kind of lose those things. But we are like, this is unapologetically what we're going to give our time and our attention and our resources to.
I absolutely love it. Well, that leads to the obvious second question. And what breakthroughs have you seen because of this shift in methodology? And it has been a shift in methodology for you, hasn't it?
It has. So I've been in Utah, May 12th marked 10 years in Utah. And so we came from North Carolina, the Bible Belt. And interestingly enough, no one ever taught me how to plant a church as a church planter, which I think is just, in hindsight, blows my mind.
Why would you need to learn what you're about to do?
All of my ecclesiology, I think, came more from denominational tradition and personal preference and not so much from the Bible. So we came and just replicated what we knew from North Carolina. So immediately rented a space, put a pulpit up front, rose, started preaching. We did that for 5 years. Then we absorbed another ministry, got buildings. We went multi-site. We had two buildings. I was running back and forth. And so that's 8 years. We did that for 3 years. So 8 years in. And I remember just thinking, we're not making any disciples. Like all of my time and energy and money is going towards this extra biblical structure, just maintaining the Sunday show. And it was a very poorly produced, underfunded show, putting this together and looking and saying, man, there's no one I can point to is that we're truly just following Christ. And I saw a lot of spectatorship and a lot of consumerism, a lot of indifference. And so we begin to have this philosophical, methodological shift. And it came, so as I'm seeing this, I began to like preach through all the one another commands in the Bible. You know, there's 49 one another commands, and try to explain, guys, this is what we need to be going after. And then preaching on the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. And I started preaching verse by verse through Acts. And I remember getting to Acts 17, and in Acts 17, you got the disciples there in Thessalonica, and they're drugged before the authorities. And they're like, you know, their complaint to the authorities was, these guys are turning the world upside down. And all they were doing was making disciples and preaching the gospel. And I remember reading that and then later preaching it and saying, no one would ever accuse us of this. No one would ever say, everyone over there in that church, they're turning the world upside down. Utah's being turned upside down. And I said, we've got to do something different. And I realized it was a big, we had to do something big. And so we sold the buildings, which is, you know, when Cortez came to the New World and he got all his men on the boat, on the land, and then he burned the boat so they couldn't go back to Spain.
Yeah.
Kind of what we did. We're like, we're not going back. Like, we're selling it. We're not going back. Like, this is it. And of course, at that point for us, house church was all theory. Like, we'd never experienced it. We'd never been part of it. We just realized we had to do something different. So we've been doing it for 2 years now, and we have seen tremendous, breakthrough. And, I think a big part of that has been equipping and releasing men and women to do what Jesus has already commanded them and given them the authority to do. And so we have seen disciples making disciples, in less than a year, even since last July, across our network now. So all the house churches counted, I think we've seen 46 people come to faith and be baptized since July. I've not been at all those baptisms. I'm not the one leading all those people. I've done a number of them, but it's actually someone has led a coworker to faith and baptized their someone's led a family member, someone's led a neighbor. It's just incredible. It's like so much bigger than me now. Which is, I think, another kind of realization is not just the importance of releasing God's people to be God's people. But the idea, I mean, just, I'm not as important as I thought I was when we were multi-site, when we were starting out. There's been a lot of kind of dying to self, I think, in that. And one of the questions I've asked myself and I've been asking others and is, do I want to reach Utah, or do I want to see Utah reached? And I think the answer to that is, do I have to do it? Like, does my church logo have to be on it, and my name, and do I have to get the credit, or am I open to just however God sees fit to use me? I'll be part of it. And I think that's a question, no matter what you're doing, house church or traditional ministry or any other kind of, you know, methodology, I think that's a good question to ask, because one is going to pretty much become a bottleneck with you as the cap. And one is going to be like, I'm open to whatever partnership, collaboration, opportunity. I'll celebrate the wins, the victories of others. I don't care if it's me or not. So
I think your spirit of humility is refreshing, Logan. I think about, you know, honestly, some of the, and I've been at, you know, smaller meetings with you, Logan, and like, you know, you've talked about some of the frustrations and you having moments with God where, you know, you're cursing in the wind and just saying like, God, please just do something, you know. But at the exact same time, you know, I think, you know, the spirit of non-territorialism and death to self, like that's a big win, hopefully, for the kingdom. And yeah. It's refreshing to hear.
That concept of kingdom mentality, I'm seeing it sweep the nation. I feel like people have this attitude now that is totally and completely open to, look, it doesn't have to be our church. It can be your church. It doesn't have to be my method. It could be your method. Like has been often stated, the message never changes, but the methods often do. And instead of being competitive with one another, whether it be traditional church with traditional church or house church with house church house church with traditional and traditional with house, right? Or whatever it might be, it's that we look and say, look at how God is reaching different people in different ways across the country. But with that being said, you know, I think about it, and it seems like a lot of people are very hesitant to the concept of the house church, and specifically, I would say, in the West. So question number three, why are so many people, do you believe, in the West, Western the United States, you know what I mean, in the West, why are they so hesitant to the concept of house church?
If I had to venture a guess at that, I would just point to my own heart, my own experience. I would say it has a lot to do with control. And I think there's great fear and I would even say some pride And I think those two things are at war in our hearts. Pride in the sense that, you know, I want, man, to be honest, guys, if something were to happen in one of the Mormon general authorities, the prophet, I mean, it'd be awesome, comes to Christ and summoned back, I really would love that to be me, but you know, and so there's like this pride of like, I want to be the one out front, in the spotlight. And then at the same time, there's this, I think this fear of what are people going to think of me if I release, you know, John Doe over here to go make disciples himself without me being present, without not under the umbrella of my church. And he does something or says something that's unbiblical, looks foolish. It's, what are people going to think of me? And so I think there's, as you know, I think that's one of the hesitant, because house church, very much, you are releasing authority. And because that's how movements and multiplication takes place, right? The more we hold on to authority, you know, we basically stunt growth and multiplication. It can't happen without me. And there was a time, guys, even when we were multi-site, if I heard someone in our church was doing something like trying to do this ministry or volunteering over here, I did everything in my power to try to bring it under the umbrella of our church name. And now it's like, I don't have to do that. Like that, God is leading them into that. He's not led me into that. The Spirit's directed them that way. He's not directing me that way. I can celebrate it, support it, encourage it. But I look around, and I know a lot of the pushback we've gotten has been on that point of control and letting things go. That
when you say pushback that you've gotten from where, from who, what are you talking about?
I think a lot, well, like you said, it's there's been, house church has not been readily received in the Western church, in the American church. It's certainly, you know, not been received in my circles back east where I'm from, in the more traditional type church settings.
Now, for the sake of our audience, some may not know, the Idea Network is multi-denominational. There are people from all over. Your background would be Free Will Baptist, whereas my background would be Independent Fundamental Baptist. So there are many people. So if you're listening to this, you're like, oh, he must be talking about my tribe. Maybe not, probably not. So go ahead and speak so that people understand that.
Yeah, no, and that was just it. I mean, you're breaking away from what's always been done, and people are going to push back, and people are, you know, and sometimes I think part of it's even we don't have a biblical understanding of what a pastor is supposed to do. And we somehow got to this idea that a pastor is supposed to do everything, and the people just come sit there and, you know, are ministered to. Yeah, watch, they're just ministered to, and they're taking it all in. And you read the scriptures, I mean, that is not the case at all. And I mean, even some of the stuff we're releasing, the making of disciples, baptizing new converts and all this kind of stuff, again, biblically, those aren't responsibilities given to the elder or the pastor. I mean, that's the body of Christ that's supposed to go out doing those things. And so again, you kind of break from the norm, and I know who I'm talking to, and I know you've experienced, so I'm not trying to, but that's just what it is. You break from the norm and people get upset.
So you've spoken to already, you know, kind of the genesis of where the transition happened from traditional, you know, your view of what church was supposed to be, as well as some of the results you've had. How does this fit into your vision now of where you go from the future? What's next?
Yeah. So for us, house church, yeah, it's not an end in itself. You know, I don't hate buildings or anything like that. But I think when you have regions with a high percentage of lostness, you have to, if I'm going to impact that lostness, is the traditional structure and methodology the most effective way to do that? And again, when we were in our multi-site model, especially, I remember looking at our budget and dividing our annual budget by how many baptisms we had that year. And just for a sense of like, what is the investment? And we were spending $35,000 per baptism. And so just, you know, compared to, I just mentioned we had 46 and those cost $0. So it's like, okay, is there a more effective way? And again, I think house church is especially effective in an area of a high percentage of lostness, because it can multiply and make disciples so quickly. So Utah is the least reached state in America. It's less than 2% Christian. I'm in Utah County. It's the eighth least reached county in America. It's 0.5% Christian. And of course, Provo is the least reached metro in America. It's 0.5% Christian. So how can we impact these huge numbers? And that's what House Church is. So in our approach, we usually go into a new neighborhood, a new area. We prayer walk it for a month or two, just trying to get a sense. I'm not looking to try to stir up things. If God's not moving, I don't need to force activity. So if I just kind of get a sense for what he's doing. And then we bring teams in to engage people. We share the gospel. We offer to read the Bible with someone, try to start what we call discovery Bible studies, with the hopes of leveraging those into a study about what it means to actually identify as a church. And we've got a study that I think it takes about 8 or 9 weeks to get through. And at the end of which we say, hey, do we want to step into this? Do you guys want to identify? We can do this right now, right here in this living room. We can identify as a church. And so we start a church like that. We're teaching these men and women how to make disciples and get them praying for their neighbors and casting vision for the next neighborhood over, the next city over, the next county, and releasing them. And in this way, you know, it doesn't take, when I was a church planter in the traditional sense, I spent 16 months on deputation raising money. So I went to 5 different states, all this funds I had to raise. It doesn't take that to do a house church. So we can real quick get disciples in a new area, real quick get a gospel presence in a new neighborhood or a new city. And again, I don't know if that would be as effective in somewhere where the percent of the Christian presence is a little higher, but I know here in Utah, there's areas, it's been incredible. And there's places like that across America. You know, the Northeast is pretty much non-Christian. Even there, where you guys are in Nevada, 2 of your counties are in the top 100 least reached counties in America. So it's like, if let's just go in there, what would it look like to impact that lostness? And I think that means you got to do something a little different, maybe what's always been done.
I love it. I love the passion that you have. And I love the fact that you're bringing these fresh ideas. And when I say fresh ideas, I mean 2000 years old, from the time of the Book of Acts within the Idea Network. Two things, that I would love to think through. Number one, what do you think, do you think that there's room in the modern denominational structures of Baptist circles or evangelical circles, non-denominational circles, for fundraising for missionaries that will do this full-time? Or do you think that they need to be purely co-vocational? Let's hit that first question. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a place for both. I think, and especially in a house church setting, especially when you get to where you're appointing elders and you're finding others with apostolic giftings who are wanting to start other house churches, you are modeling something that you want others to emulate. And so I wouldn't want someone to look at what I'm doing and think I could never do what Logan's doing because, you know, he's got this degree and this much experience and this, you know, he had raised money. I wouldn't want that. At the same time, I think there's biblical precedent for investing in missionary work. And so whether or not we could ever see that adopted in a traditional denomination, I think it'd have to be a lot of, reprogramming kind of how we think about missions and ministry. But yeah, I think you could see both play out.
So let me ask you this, Logan. Maybe somebody's listening to this right now and they're totally jiving and they're thinking, man, I got to talk to Logan about this. Is there a way they could contact you and say, man, I'm really interested, my passion, my heart, maybe my methodology needs to shift and to talk with you further about this from the Idea Network?
Absolutely. I think the easiest way, I've got a Linktree link that has a number of ways to connect with me, including a way to just add a call, a 15-minute call to my calendar. Okay, I could do that. So it's linktr.ee/LoganWolf. And that's LoganWolf. And there'll be there's 5 different ways to connect with me there.
That's really great, Logan. We really appreciate that. I mean, we've been friends now for years, but I mean, Idea Network is a community of friends. And I'm certain of the many people that listen, there are going to be a few guys, maybe more, maybe a few gals too, and say, this is where my heart is. This is what God is leading me to. We need to talk. And please reach out to Logan. You'll love having a conversation with him. He's down to earth. He really is a wonderful man. And he and his wife are dear friends of ours. Tell us about this book, Holy of Holies. Man, this Holy of Holies, the Holy of Holies, Discovering What the Bible Says About the Dwelling Place of God. Heather and I both read it. It's a quick read. It probably takes depending on how slow you read, an hour, 2 hours, a couple hours, but it's fantastic. Talk to us about this and how they can find it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Holy of Holies actually came out of a sermon series I did. So if you're unaware, Provo is the only city in the world that has two Mormon temples. And so in 2016, it was announced that the second temple would be open to the public for tours. And so it was all anybody was talking about. And so I thought, okay, I've never studied it out in any great depth, and I want to equip our people knowing that these conversations are just naturally going to be coming up. And so I put together a sermon series. Granted, after the sermon series, man, the conversation did not stop. In fact, that sermon series had incredible downloads here in Utah. And then I realized, okay, I actually need to address this more clearly, or I need to talk about this more. So we kind of just begin to flesh that out. And then I realized, you know what? This is an important conversation, not just because we live here where the Mormon temples are, but this is a conversation about how God orients himself among his creation. Like, this is a conversation about where do you and I approach God? And so it doesn't matter where you live. This is a good topic. And so I'm going to put all this together. And of course, you guys know this, the temple, the tabernacle, huge portions of the Bible. There is tomes of commentaries on those passages of scripture, and even the volumes, I mean, that I was referencing stuff for the sermon series and note of the book, big, thick, hundreds and hundreds of pages. So the book itself became an exercise in how do I make this very clear and very simple for the purpose of someone could take it and read it, like you just said, Josh, in an hour or two, and come away with understanding, okay, this is the significance of the temple, and this is the promise that's been fulfilled. As now I can come to God anywhere directly because of Christ's sacrifice, and anywhere I'm gathered because of the Holy Spirit, I'm in the presence of my Maker. And so it's been great. I've actually been sending free copies to churches and cities that have a Mormon temple. And so I did that all through Utah. I've started sending them up to Idaho. And I just got word, a pastor wrote me back, said, thank you for the book. He actually preached a sermon series based on the content in the book and then ordered enough copies and gave it out to his congregation. So yeah, it was really cool just to kind of see, again, this important topic kind of just go beyond what was my own ministry here in Utah.
The Holy of Holies can be found on Amazon and Kindle. Kindle for $4.99, easy download, very good read, 63 pages. And the audiences that I found it best for, number one, is any Christian who wants to know more about the temple. And this is a great read that I can give out to any church member to say, hey, look, this is going to help you understand where God dwells, how God dwells in you, and what the temple is, what the temple was, what the temple is. And then the second type of person is if you have a heart to reach our LDS friends and neighbors with the gospel of Jesus Christ, you need to get this book. A fantastic resource. You can pick it up, like I said, on Amazon and Kindle. Anytime. Logan, thank you so much for joining us.
Man, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for thinking of me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.